Three works of ethics have come down under Aristotle's name, and this one, the Nicomachean Ethics, is the most famous. Nobody really knows why it's called the Nicomachean Ethics, but it's thought that it was edited after his death by his son Nicomachus. Another work is called the Eudemian Ethics, and that has some very close connections to the Nicomachean Ethics. It shares some so-called common books, and it's thought that one was edited by Eudemus after his death. The Nicomachean Ethics is generally recognised as the most complete and the most important, and probably the latest of his writings on ethics, though there is some controversy, and others champion the Eudemian Ethics as being later. When you come to read the Nicomachean Ethics, you have to bear in mind that the society Aristotle lived in was very different from ours. The biggest difference, of course, is that slavery was taken for granted. Aristotle certainly had slaves of his own. In fact, after his wife's death, he lived with a female slave whom he freed in his will. We have his will, and he says some very nice things about her. She was loyal and so on. But nonetheless, she remained a slave until his death. So slaves had a lowly place, and manual workers also had a very lowly place. Aristotle didn't think they were capable of living the best life. They weren't capable of happiness or even really of proper human virtue. And of course, women had a very lowly place too. He barely mentions women at all, though he does have some nice things to say about mothers. But he certainly takes it for granted that he's writing for young men, that only young men are going to be able to be happy, and that only young men are going to be able to cultivate virtue and live the best life. Although Athens was a democracy, Aristotle was familiar with other kinds of constitution as well, monarchies, oligarchies, and so on. And he's a little bit ambivalent about which he thinks is best. He was in favour of citizens having a chance to rule themselves, but he actually thought that only the relatively well-off and leisured classes should be citizens. He knew the city needed manual workers and slaves, but he would rather they weren't fully-fledged citizens and therefore didn't have the vote. So big social differences in his society. We have to bear that in mind. Translating Aristotle's Greek poses some real challenges. There are some terms for which it's very hard to find a good English equivalent, and one has to make do with the best thing available. The most famous concept in the Ethics is the word eudaimonia, which is translated happiness, but might be better translated flourishing or success or the best life or something like that. Another really difficult word to translate is the Greek word arete, which is traditionally translated virtue, but can also mean excellence in general, so that even a knife or a pruning hook can be said to have its own arete or excellence. Some people think we shouldn't translate the Greek word by virtue because they think this gives too modern a ring to Aristotle. But virtue is a good translation so long as one is prepared to recognise that for Aristotle the virtues might not look terribly like the virtues as we conceive of them today. There's another really important term. The Greek word is phronesis, which is here translated practical wisdom. That's a bit of a mouthful, but I think it conveys well the idea both that it's something intellectual, it's a kind of wisdom, but it's to do with how you act. Sometimes it's translated prudence and sometimes just wisdom. So that gives you an idea of how important it is and how difficult it is to choose the right term to fit Aristotle's concept. Three works of ethics have come down under Aristotle's name, and this one, the Nicomachean Ethics, is the most famous. Nobody really knows why it's called the Nicomachean Ethics, but it's thought that it was edited after his death by his son Nicomachus. Another work is called the Eudemian Ethics, and that has some very close connections to the Nicomachean Ethics. It shares some so-called common books, and it's thought that one was edited by Eudemus after his death. The Nicomachean Ethics is generally recognised as the most complete and the most important, and probably the latest of his writings on ethics, though there is some controversy, and others champion the Eudemian Ethics as being later. When you come to read the Nicomachean Ethics, you have to bear in mind that the society Aristotle lived in was very different from ours. The biggest difference, of course, is that slavery was taken for granted. Aristotle certainly had slaves of his own. In fact, after his wife's death, he lived with a female slave whom he freed in his will. We have his will, and he says some very nice things about her. She was loyal and so on. But nonetheless, she remained a slave until his death. So slaves had a lowly place, and manual workers also had a very lowly place. Aristotle didn't think they were capable of living the best life. They weren't capable of happiness or even really of proper human virtue. And of course, women had a very lowly place too. He barely mentions women at all, though he does have some nice things to say about mothers. But he certainly takes it for granted that he's writing for young men, that only young men are going to be able to be happy, and that only young men are going to be able to cultivate virtue and live the best life. Although Athens was a democracy, Aristotle was familiar with other kinds of constitution as well, monarchies, oligarchies, and so on. And he's a little bit ambivalent about which he thinks is best. He was in favour of citizens having a chance to rule themselves, but he actually thought that only the relatively well-off and leisured classes should be citizens. He knew the city needed manual workers and slaves, but he would rather they weren't fully-fledged citizens and therefore didn't have the vote. So big social differences in his society. We have to bear that in mind. So Aristotle says happiness is activity of the rational part of the soul in accordance with excellence or virtue. The Greek word is arete, and there's quite a lot of dispute about how to translate it, but I'll stick to virtue from now on. And he thinks that the human virtues fall into two kinds: moral virtues, in other words, virtues of character, and intellectual virtues, virtues of the intellect. And it's his theory of moral virtue that's the most famous, because he has this famous claim that moral virtue involves a mean. I'll come to that in a moment, but a little bit about moral virtue or virtue of character first. What's really important for Aristotle is that moral virtue isn't just a matter of how you act, but it's also a matter of how you feel, what emotions you have, what feelings you have. And he calls it a disposition, that's to say, a firm state of character, which disposes you both to feel and to act in an appropriate way. Now, I'm using the term appropriate. He uses the term mean, sometimes translated intermediate. And people often think that Aristotle's so-called golden mean is a doctrine of moderation. But that's completely wrong. He isn't advocating moderation. He's advocating doing the appropriate thing and feeling the appropriate way for any given circumstance. And you might say, well, isn't that rather trivial if he doesn't tell us what the appropriate way to feel is or what the appropriate thing to do is? But that's exactly Aristotle's point. He says, you can't have a rule book setting out how to act in any given circumstance. So what you've got to do to become a morally virtuous person is to grow up, to be properly educated, to live with people who can set you a good example, and to learn to understand what the appropriate feeling is and what the appropriate action is in any given situation. So how does Aristotle's ethics compare with some famous modern ethical theories? One big difference is that Aristotle asks, what's the best life for a human being, and how can I live the best life? So ethics, if you like, is about what's best for me. This certainly makes his ethics ego-centered, but that doesn't mean it makes it selfish or self-centered in a bad way. But it does mean it contrasts quite importantly with, say, Kant's ethics. Kant asks, what gives an action moral worth? And answers that to have moral worth, it must be done from the motive of duty. And it contrasts again with a very different kind of modern approach to ethics, so-called consequentialism. Consequentialism asks, what makes an action the right action? And answers in terms of its consequences for the general happiness. In other words, for consequentialism, what makes an action a right action isn't merely something to do with the agent, but something to do with its consequences for people in general. Aristotle's approach is very different. He isn't really interested primarily in the question, what makes an action a right action? He doesn't ask, how should I act to do my duty or to act rightly? He asks, what sort of person should I be to live well? And the kind of person I should be involves being a person who has the moral virtues, justice, courage, temperance, and so on, as well as the intellectual virtues, being excellent at reasoning and thinking about the important things in life, as well as the important things not in life. So Aristotle's focus isn't on how we should behave towards others, though insofar as he thinks we need the moral virtues to be happy, behaving correctly towards others will be part and parcel of living the good life. Why is it worth reading Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics? It's true that a lot of courses in ethics do actually start by reading Aristotle, and that's very different, for instance, from his physics, which nowadays are really only of historical interest. Aristotle's ethics has really come back into its own as of very considerable interest to contemporary moral philosophy. And that's for a number of reasons. Focusing on the question, what's the best kind of life to live? What are the really human capacities that make a life a good life? This focus seems now really important, in contrast to a perhaps rather drier approach that focused on what one's duty is. So that aspect of Aristotle's ethics makes it important. But I think there's another aspect of his ethics as well that makes it important, which is his idea of ethical method. Aristotle thought it very important to gather in common opinions about ethics. He didn't then just relay them, but he thought you really had to start by, as it were, anchoring yourself in common opinions, putting them together, looking at where they contradicted each other, and finding a theory that best explained the majority of the common opinions. He brings some of his own more philosophical ideas to ethics as well, so it's a very appropriate blend of common sense and a more theoretical underpinning. One specially valuable aspect of Aristotle's ethics, in my view, is his account of moral education, his account of how we become good people. It's a very common sense and practical approach, but I think it's really importantly right. Aristotle thinks that we become good people by practice. That's to say, we've got to start, when fairly young, doing the right actions, not really knowing why they're the right actions at first, but just getting into the habit of doing them, thanks to a good example from our parents or teachers or whatever. And once we've got into those good habits, we can add a kind of reflective notion and come to understand why these are the right actions and come to learn how to do a slightly different thing in different circumstances. But the important thing for Aristotle is we have to come to enjoy acting in the right way. And that's why he put so much emphasis on having the right feelings as well as doing the right things. Because if you simply do the right thing but hate doing it, then you're not really going to develop into a morally virtuous person. I think that's a tremendously important and actually correct view of moral education. There's another important and relevant aspect to Aristotle's ethical writing, and that's his view of the nature of ethical truth. Now, many people think that if there are truths in ethics, they have to be of the kind, it's always wrong to do such and such, or it's always right to tell the truth. Aristotle was very sensible and recognized that it's very hard to find true universal generalizations of that kind, that different circumstances made different actions appropriate. But he didn't think that we should therefore throw up our hands in the air and say, so there aren't any truths at all. He recognized that there can be moral truths, even if they don't take the form of universally true generalizations. It's always wrong to tell a lie, for instance. And this position, surprisingly, is one that many people could learn from today, because you often hear moralists saying, if we can't have universally true moral truths, then it's all just a matter of relativism and a matter of opinion. Well, Aristotle knew better than that. The new Oxford World's Classics edition of Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics is a reissue of a very famous translation of the Nicomachean Ethics by Sir David Ross. Ross was a very famous and important scholar of Aristotle, and he translated many of the works, and his translations are universally accepted to be both accurate and extremely stylish, even though they were written about 80 years ago. Oxford World's Classics decided it was time to reissue Ross's translation, but they wanted a brand new introduction and they wanted explanatory notes to the work so that somebody coming to it could have a lot of help in understanding some of the more difficult arguments and some of the more difficult terminology. And that's what I've tried to do in the notes to the edition. I've tried to help the reader wherever they would have come across something a little bit difficult, to explain the background, to link it to other passages, and to explain the cross-references. In my introduction, I've tried not only to give a brief introduction to the most important aspects of the Nicomachean Ethics, but also to compare Aristotle's approach to ethics with some modern approaches, both in terms of its content and in terms of its method. Translating Aristotle's Greek poses some real challenges. There are some terms for which it's very hard to find a good English equivalent, and one has to make do with the best thing available. The most famous concept in the Ethics is the word eudaimonia, which is translated happiness, but might be better translated flourishing or success or the best life or something like that. Another really difficult word to translate is the Greek word arete, which is traditionally translated virtue, but can also mean excellence in general, so that even a knife or a pruning hook can be said to have its own arete or excellence. Some people think we shouldn't translate the Greek word by virtue because they think this gives too modern a ring to Aristotle. But virtue is a good translation so long as one is prepared to recognise that for Aristotle the virtues might not look terribly like the virtues as we conceive of them today. There's another really important term. The Greek word is phronesis, which is here translated practical wisdom. That's a bit of a mouthful, but I think it conveys well the idea both that it's something intellectual, it's a kind of wisdom, but it's to do with how you act. Sometimes it's translated prudence, and sometimes just wisdom. So that gives you an idea of how important it is and how difficult it is to choose the right term to fit Aristotle's concept.